There he is, the one and only, Jay Mariotti. Mr. Mariotti, how are you?
Me? I'm living in a city of fear in this hermetically sealed lockdown. L.A. County today, 29 new coronavirus deaths. That's the biggest daily increase of the pandemic. When I walk outside, Dino, in my mask and my hoodie, I freak out when these sweaty runners go by, or these bro cyclists, and they're sweating and they're clammy and they're about 6 inches away. And you live in Wyoming. I mean, this to me is fascinating, because I'm wondering if people there are wondering if this is somebody else's problem. Well, I think people here would love to move to Wyoming.
No. Keep them out there on the West Coast with you, all those sweaty runners. And listen, Jay, ditch the mask, ditch the hoodie. This is a hoax, Jay. The whole thing's a hoax. Let it go. I'm telling you right now, these are inflated numbers. There are nefarious underpinnings attached to this whole thing. You may not agree with me, and that's fine, but I'm telling you right now, I want the country back to work. I want sports back on the dais. I want the economy to open up. I'm sick and tired of living in this alleged pandemic America.
So these people aren't dead?
Well, yeah, some of them have died, but not all of them have died as the result of coronavirus, no.
And who is perpetrating this hoax?
They, the government, is perpetrating this hoax.
And how would this be helping the current government?
I believe that this is not just this government. I think it's a worldwide governmental system in terms of ushering in so many things that have to do with continuing taking away of civil liberties, basic human rights, population control. All these kinds of things are in the mix.
Well, if it were a hoax, it is one elaborate show, I would say that. I don't agree with you, but it would take an incredible amount of work and effort in planning and acting for this to actually be a hoax. I don't think so, Dino, but you and I have gone way back, so I'll listen to anything you have to say. I'm not going to start yelling at you or anything, but no, I don't think it's a hoax, no.
Well, the big story of the day is that Tom Brady went on Howard Stern's show today, and I don't think that they really mined any real good stuff out of it, other than Brady talking about Rob Gronkowski's dick. But other than that, I don't know if you heard it. I don't listen to Stern, but I don't think there was a lot there, Jay.
Well, I mean, Brady let his guard down. This is usually prim and proper Tom Brady, dating back 20, 25 years. Hell, I remember when I covered him at Michigan, when he got benched in his senior year because some hotshot freshman was on the team. And so I remember this guy being Mr. Polished Americana for a quarter of a century. So all of a sudden, he ditches Belichick, signs with Tampa Bay, moves into Derek Jeter's mansion, and goes on Howard Stern, of all things, and well, you know, he started cursing on the air. That's new. He talked about his marriage being on the rocks 2 years ago. That's new. And he was pretty open about Belichick and the Patriots. So, yeah, and it's not so much Stern pulling it out of him. It's the fact that Brady has had this human transformation all of a sudden. He decides to go on Howard freaking Stern,
yeah.
and let loose. I mean, what got into this guy? That's what I would ask. I don't think it has anything to do with Stern. It has to do with Brady in the middle of this pandemic. I think he's being somewhat insensitive. I've talked about this for weeks with you, how sports in general have been insensitive and delusional. Why Tom Brady, who has been so tight-lipped about everything in his life for all these years, would suddenly go on Stern today and talk about this? I don't get it. It's as if he's been unleashed, invigorated by this move. I don't know. I think the question is, does Belichick subject these guys to such brainwashing that It's as if they can't get away from some Turkish jail after years of confinement, and all of a sudden they turn into different human beings. I think that's the story today.
Well, I think something you mentioned that I was unaware of. He said that his marriage was on the rocks 2 years ago with Giselle. I could see that. I mean, I don't know how Brady has put up with her for as long as he has. Maybe he went on Stern. You talk about letting his hair down. Maybe he's having a midlife crisis. I don't know.
That could be. I mean, he's veering toward 45. He's talking about how his wife didn't like it when he was busy with football. Then he turned to his TB12 business. Then he'd be working out in the off season. And like a lot of men in their early 40s, his wife says to him, "Hey, pal, you got to start doing the dishes and you've got to start taking care of the kids." I don't know if she threatened him with divorce or what, but he did talk about it. We never, ever would have known this in his previous incarnation. So the fact that he's letting loose here, I don't know. I mean, maybe he'll go to Tampa and go to strip joints. I mean, isn't Tampa known for strip joints? Maybe
Hooters. I know that's where Hooters started, I believe, in Tampa. But Giselle is, I don't know. And Jay, we've never talked about our taste in women, but Giselle's never done it for me. I just, I know she's a supermodel and all that, but a lot of supermodels are out there that I don't think are, all that, aesthetically pleasing as far as I'm concerned. I don't know. I just, as far as I'm concerned, I think Brady could have done a lot better than Giselle.
A lot of people, you're on a roll tonight, man. The coronavirus is a hoax and yeah. Giselle is, you're not into Giselle.
Oh, you're like
on a roll,
her.
Man.
You like her. So you like Giselle. Giselle is your cup of tea.
Well, I wouldn't agree with that either. That's not my cup of tea, but I would say that Brady, let me say this about Tom Brady. He's getting away from New England, which is a Puritan place even now. When you think about life in Boston and Brady, I think when he first got there, he had a bachelor place in the Back Bay. That made some sense. He hung out with bros at bars, and then he became Tom Brady. And then he meets Giselle, and they get married here in Santa Monica at a Catholic church, and they have kids to go along with his previous son. And all of a sudden, Tom Brady becomes Mr. America, and he has to act like it. And I'm sure it wasn't easy for him. They moved to a mansion in Chestnut Hill in the suburbs. He talked today about how he wasn't aware that Derek Jeter's mansion, that people could ride up in their boats behind it, and he's got gawkers in the back looking at him. Is she joining him in Tampa? I don't know. I mean, that's not really my prerogative, but if the man's going to talk about his marriage like this, he's opening up his life like never before to the media. And if and when we ever get back to actual football and media covering football, And as you know, I don't think that's going to happen in the calendar year. And then Tom Brady's suddenly 44 years old, and we're wondering, I think you mentioned this last week, how, will his skills start to erode with the year off from football approaching his mid-40s? And you've got media covering this story. It becomes the biggest story in sports, and all of a sudden he's talking about his, marriage. So it might lead to a shift in how Tom Brady is covered in the future, and if he wants to run for president, I don't know if that's ever going to happen.
Well, I said on the air earlier, Jay, I'm a little disappointed in Brady. First of all, going on Howard Stern's show, I don't know what the upside there is, number one, okay? Number two, what he talked about, some of the things. Now, you mentioned he talked about Giselle, he talked about this, he talked about that. Well, you're talking about Rob Gronkowski's junk. Now, this is a living legend, Tom Brady, okay? Peyton Manning's not out there talking about Marvin Harrison's dick. Terry Bradshaw's not talking about Franco Harris's dick. Troy Aikman's not talking about Michael Irvin's dick. What got into Brady? Was he high on the show today?
Stern. I mean, that's what Stern does to people. I mean, look through time. You can find a long list of people who are generally tight-lipped about their lives, and they go on Stern, and it's as if they've been slipped a Mickey or something. I mean, he said in that interview, I could give a shit about legacy. I mean, Tom Brady would never, ever use that word ever in
public. Do you agree with that, by the way? I don't agree with that. I don't believe him is what I'm saying.
Of course he does, because in a previous thought, he talked about how he thought it would be, and he used the word shitty. He said it would be a shitty argument to say that Belichick needed him more than he needed Belichick, or vice versa. He talked about that that he and Belichick are on the same page, yet he also discussed the fact that he and Belichick have talked about that, meaning that has been an important discussion to both Belichick, considered the greatest coach of all time, and Brady, the greatest quarterback of all time. That those two have actually discussed this topic that has been a barroom debate for years and years and will continue to be, that kind of fascinated me. And yes, you're right. That told me he does have an ego and he does care about legacy, or else he wouldn't have talked about how he and Belichick have discussed it. So, no, I don't buy that. What I like from athletes, especially the great ones, is when they lower the facade and show us who they truly are. Tom Brady is known to drink beer in large quantities. He loves his guys. He loves his bros. That's probably part of why the marriage was starting to sink a little bit. And I happen to like it when they open up. Now, I hope he doesn't shut down again. I hope it wasn't a one-time Howard Stern thing and that's it. Then I'll be deeply disappointed and start to wonder, is this the phony Tom and is this the real Tom? By and large, I have found Brady, much like Jordan, who we have talked about a lot, to be a pretty down-to-earth guy when you get to know somebody like that. Tom Brady didn't ask for this life. He grew up in the Bay Area, loves his father, loves his family, had a rough time when his mother was ill a few years ago. Like anybody else, I could name you all sorts of assholes in sports, and some of them aren't the great ones. The fact that Tom Brady generally has been pretty decent and is a lot like Derek Jeter, avoided scandal except for one deflated batch of footballs one year, but off the field has avoided scandal. And for that, in this era of the 21st century when media hound and crucify anybody who's remotely famous, that's something of a major success that he has pulled that off. Now let's see if he continues to do that in his second football act, where a lot of people, Dino, are expecting him to fall flat on his face and bow out ungracefully.
It's Mariotti here in hour number two with me every Wednesday. Jay Mariotti joins the show here 16 minutes after the hour. Jay, we can talk about the TV packages and this. I got to get your thoughts on this incredible baseball plan to go to Arizona and imprison their teams. We'll talk about that. But I, you know, obviously being a huge sports fan that I've always been, I've got all of the packages on DirecTV. I get the NFL season ticket. I get the hockey package, the basketball package, the baseball package. Now, my wife takes care of all of the details in terms of our bills and our payments and stuff like that. She's the detail person, so I've not asked her. But I want to ask you if you know anything about DirecTV kicking back me some money for games that aren't being played with some of these packages. For instance, the NHL's been out to lunch the last month or so. Same thing with the NBA. Baseball has not yet started. Have you heard anything about DirecTV kicking back money to subscribers who buy these packages?
In fact, they are not. And cable subscribers like you are very pissed off right now because you're not seeing live sports. You're getting this regurgitation of games from 30 years ago. I mean, I was flipping through last night just to see the offerings. The MLB Network had some 1968 World Series, and I can't even follow the broadcaster. What is this on for? And then I realized in the quarter, Al Kaline passed away. What? Come on! You have to realize that the MLB Network or ESPN or any of these networks, that you do have people paying these fees, and these cable companies are not erasing the fees, so it is incumbent upon the sports networks to try a little harder to give us better stuff. Now, the ESPN, of course, with ABC and the NFL Network are giving us the draft in 2 weeks. Okay, but as long as this pandemic lasts, and Dino, I don't think we're going to see sports for a very long time. Yes, I think it's time for the cable companies to erase those sports fees. Dino, it's not just you with DirecTV. It's some little old lady in Pasadena who doesn't even know she's paying an ESPN charge of $8 or whatever it is.
Yeah.
She has no idea. She doesn't even have a sports package yet. We have seen this happen. Here in Los Angeles, it took a pandemic for the Dodgers deal to finally get done. 70% of Greater Los Angeles has been blacked out. They're TVs, as Time Warner has created this monopoly in this blackout situation. Finally, it took a pandemic, but now everybody in LA can now see the Dodgers. Well, unfortunately, you're not going to get the Dodgers for a very long time. So, yes, this is a critical issue. It's called cord cutting, and that's why the networks and the sports leagues, Dino, are on this mad rush to resume sports in these quarantine domes in Arizona, or these casinos in Vegas, or Dana White in some secret location, or a private island. It's absolutely embarrassing what they're all doing, but there's a reason for it, because the cable TV industry, which has funded the $160 million industry of sports in America, is crumbling. And you're going to have more and more people now cutting their cords. You see Quibi starting this week. That's the, you know, millennial-driven, you know, 10-minute bit streaming initiative started by Jeffrey Katzenberg. The more you're going to be able to get this stuff for $4.95, you're going to be looking at your cable bill, and it's going to say $140. And you say, I can't afford this. I'm one of the 25 million unemployed in America right now. I can't pay this bill. And my God, they're not even giving me live sports, and they're still charging me for it. So, Dino, you're not alone. That is the central issue happening in sports right now. And I'm rather appalled that the cable companies continue to charge that money and the sports networks continue to give us a lot of nonsense.
Question, comment for Jay, send it my way. DinoTalkUSA@gmail.com. DinoTalkUSA@gmail.com. You mentioned the Dodgers just a second ago. And, of course, this plan, which was floated the other day, first reported by Jeff Passan at ESPN. I spoke about it on the show last night, Jay. Interested to get your thoughts. Going to send all the teams, all 30 teams, to Arizona. Going to play the games, going to quarantine the teams and basically imprison them in hotels. The only place they're going to be able to go, the teams from the hotel to the ballpark, ballpark back to the hotel, no contact with the family, can't see the kids, do nothing but play baseball, empty stadiums. They're doing this, of course, not because they want to give anything back to the American sporting public. They're doing this because they know they've got to play a certain amount of games to cash in on the monstrous the national TV money. This is ludicrous. This is absurd. You want to talk about an act of ultimate desperation. I couldn't help but think of you when I heard about this and what you might say on the show about it this week.
All right, let's assume for shits and giggles that hundreds of baseball players are going to abandon their families amid this apocalyptic anguish we're going through right now, and they're going to go isolate like lab rats for months in the Arizona desert where the temperatures in the summer are 120 degrees,
yeah.
And they're going to agree to this Twilight Zone existence. And they have to first, of course, test negative for the virus. And if they do, and Dino, some will test positive, but if they do, they're going to go play in these fanless stadiums, and they're going to live and sleep and eat and I'm sure drink a hell of a lot in this lockdown quarantine. And they're not allowed to have any contact with anybody beyond teammates and team personnel. I even have this great idea. I think the owners could sell naming rights. We could call it the Purell Dome or the Trump Super Tent or something. Sell naming rights. And then the NBA, which is looking at losing $1 billion in this pandemic, they're going to do the same thing. They're going to sequester these teams within a casino, hotel, arena complex. And then they're going to administer this rapid response blood testing before games. And they think that's going to create instant amnesia about all these NBA players who already have tested positive, at least 10, probably 4 or 5 dozen more than that that we don't know about. And this is a sport, Dino, where they're literally grappling and spraying sweat on every single play. And we're going to forget about all of this and just carry on in this bubble with the NBA. And then the NFL is going to have its draft. And then Dana White, has his UFC continuing, and the NHL and MLS and even college football and Dabo Sweeney. They're all going to just proceed along in this bubble. Here's the question, Dino, along with the obvious health risks for the players and their families and the support personnel and the managers and the coaches and everybody involved. You're talking, I don't know, 1,500, 1,600 people in Major League Baseball alone in this quarantine bubble. Do fans even want to watch sports
not this
in
one
a televised bubble.
No, not this one.
LeBron James is sick. Part of the fun and the fascination and the motivation of sports, the fans, the environment. Where, how is this going to work? I don't want to watch that. It's going to be as creepy and surreal as what we're dealing with right now in America. It's just going to be a reminder, if I'm watching the Orioles playing the Texas Rangers in an empty stadium, what the hell am I doing with my life to watch this? Can't I occupy myself in better ways than this? Read a great book, find a great movie. Why am I watching this? It's really insensitive, Dino, for sports to actually believe that they can bring the country back. And remember, most of them are very wealthy and famous, and they probably believe they can fight the coronavirus on their own because we're macho athletes and we can do this. To me, it's not so much the athletes, it's the owners who are so desperate. They're getting their asses kicked. They're losing billions of dollars, and they are this desperate to actually ask athletes to do this and jeopardize their family lives. And yeah, we're just going to bolt our families for 6 months. Yeah, really? I don't think the family is going to appreciate that. Yes, they're going to get a paycheck, but really, Dino, LeBron James, Mike Trout, whose wife is supposed to have a baby in the next few months, do you really think they're going to go hide out in a bubble for 6 months? Or in the NBA's case, a few months and finish the playoffs? No.
No.
I could see players, you know, rookies, first-year players, but maybe living paycheck to paycheck doing this. I cannot imagine the superstars of sports agreeing to this. So you've even got Scott Boras, the super agent, saying, we can save America. No, Scott Boras is trying to save his ass because he just negotiated $1 billion in contracts a few months ago,
yeah,
and he's going to lose that money if we lose the baseball season.
Right.
So I think you're hearing a lot of people who have never had to think about money thinking about the money they're losing, and that's why you see these preposterous proposals to play in Arizona bubbles. I agree with you. It's ludicrous.
Your last point was, I think, the most prescient of all. It's, you're talking about people who really don't have to think along the lines of the common man and woman in this country, and many people who are indeed millions of people that are living in a paycheck-to-paycheck capacity, Jay. So it's all about the money at the end of the day, and it's a ludicrous, absurd, nonsensical suggestion to do what they're proposing. And I think it would be an artistic flop. I think it would. There's a part of me, Jay, that it really doesn't know how sports, with the people who are running sports, really survive with the people that are running sports. But there's a part of me that hopes they actually go through with this just to see what an unmitigated disaster it's going to be. By the way, not going to sit in the dugouts, Jay, right? They're going to sit in the stands, the players, six seats away from one another, okay? The umpire is going to be about 8 feet behind the batter and the catcher. They're going to use an electronic strike zone. But what about the close? If they're worried about contact, if the umpire's got to be 8 feet behind, or I don't know, wherever they're going to put him, what about the close contact between a catcher and a batter, a guy that's on first base?
Or somebody sliding into, second base.
Right.
This is
just nuts.
Insane. And they're so busy thinking about trying to save their financial asses that they're not even thinking about the number one issue, the health of players. You don't think that somebody isn't going to test positive. And once that happens, as we've seen in Japan, they were about to start up the Japanese Baseball League this month. And then there were positive tests. And then finally that government that was trying to hide everything because they wanted to continue this pipe dream about the Olympics this summer, finally the government shut it down until further notice. So the minute you have one positive test in our hermetically sealed bubble in Arizona, I'm sure Major League Baseball would say, we'll just retest everybody. No, you're going to have families back home saying, Daddy, get your ass out of there. And no, you're going to have to retest hundreds of people, players, managers, coaches, umpires, if you have them, grounds crew people, clubhouse boys, food preparers, groundskeepers, just go on and on, hotel workers where they're staying, and you thoroughly expect the these guys to stay in 30 different confined areas, 30 different hotels. They're going to go crazy, stir crazy.
Yeah,
that's what I... getting high and stoned. You're going to test them. I mean, I shouldn't be laughing.
No. But, you know, I said...
laughing matter.
I said on the show.
The absolute absurdity for these supposedly brilliant men who run baseball and run basketball. As we often see in a crisis, Dino, you find out who the real dipshits are in life and who the smart people are. The people running baseball are complete dipshits.
No, and to your point about going stir crazy, I mentioned that on the show last night. I talked about the mental health effect of something like this. I mean, you're imprisoning these guys for upwards of 4, 5, 6 months to the hotel, to the ballpark, to the hotel, back to the ballpark. You don't think some guys are actually going to go crazy in such a situation? Of course they are.
And they aren't allowed to, they're going to be told, don't talk to each other either, because somebody might have it. Well, you know, I don't need to tell you this, boy, up to 40% of the U.S. population doesn't show symptoms. Well, I'm sure that applies to baseball players, basketball players, hockey players, Dana White's guys. It applies to everybody across the board, and yet you're going to subject these people and jeopardize, again, their health and that of their families. Because you're trying to, save yourself some billions. And I hold the TV networks accountable here, too. They could displaying some responsibility here and say, no, we can't have this. It's too much of a health risk. They will be risking, by the way, their own television technical personnel will be risking their lives in this, too, because you need the cameras and the camera operators. I don't know if they're going to have broadcasters from doing it from their homes. I don't know. I don't even want to think about this because it's so stupid. But here's something to ponder, Dino. A poll, and I'm glad somebody did this poll. It was conducted by Ketchum Sports. And only 21% of U.S. sports fans, 21, actually do want game action to resume without fans. So most people are against this ludicrous idea. 45% think sports should not resume until the fans can attend the games, and 17% favor a complete shutdown of sports. So what these league people and network people have ignored in their mad rush to resume is that packed stadiums and arenas are vital to a fan's experience, whether you're watching in person or on TV. So you've had LeBron say, hey, what is the word sport without fan? There's no excitement. There's no crying. There's no joy. There's no back and forth. Dino, we don't see Hollywood movie stars and music stars clamoring to come back with live content. Why every day do we have to be bombarded by sports leagues, huffing and puffing and panning and saying, yeah, we're coming back? I don't hear Bruce Springsteen saying, yeah, I'm coming back in May, and we're going to do it in a bubble. I don't see George Clooney doing it. Why do I have to see sports people doing this?
Wait, what's even more revealing is that, when I read about it and I saw it, I rejected it immediately. It didn't take me 2 seconds to think about the logistical nightmare that it would be, the burden that it would put on players, family, staff, everything that you mentioned. And, not to mention the artistic debacle, I think it would produce. It wouldn't sound normal. It wouldn't look normal, smell normal. Nothing about it would be normal. It wouldn't be a return to normalcy or even close to being the status quo as we've grown so accustomed to throughout the years of watching sports. But here's the thing, Jay, and something that ties in with something that you and I talk about all the time. I have not seen one column on ESPN, Fox Sports, or any of the major sports websites out there with someone, a columnist, a rational thinker who has ripped this apart. And take the health aspect out of it for a second. Just the whole way that they want to put this together. You would think that maybe somebody on The Athletic has written about it. I don't know. But nobody has criticized this at all. It's like guys
they're
like Jeff.
They're all in business with sports.
Well, of course.
They are huffing and puffing and panning just as much as the leagues and the networks.
Bingo.
Are these sports media outlets, because their survival is based on sports returning. The Athletic has a subscription base filled with sports readers, and I happen to write a column. Jason Barrett has a longtime radio industry guy, and he has a site, and I wrote a column for him this week. It was very long, and He ran every word of it, and it pretty much detailed everything you and I have been talking about, the scam of all of this, and I credit Jason for running it, because I'm sure he caught hell from a lot of people in at TV networks and radio networks, and even from The Athletic, which I pretty much excoriated in that column, because The Athletic has had way too many sophomoric idiot pieces. There was one there about, gee, what if Johnny Cueto hadn't pulled his oblique in the 2012 playoffs? That was the headline, and I completely lost it. And they have way too much content like that. They've had some good pieces, but generally it stays away from covering the coronavirus. And, Dino, when you know, I've taken pride in this. You and I have talked about, you know, dating way back when I was a pup columnist covering the World Series in the Bay Area, and there was an earthquake, and many writers couldn't wait to, you know, go home. I decided to stick around. I'm not patting myself on the back. I'm just telling you how I operate and others operate like me. I wanted to stick around and cover the aftermath of the earthquake and the devastation, because I didn't want to be just a sports writer. In 96 in Atlanta, at the Olympics, a bomb goes off. And me and two colleagues are scurry around because they've cordoned off the entire area, and we find a gas station a few blocks away, and I threw a wad of money at the station attendant at 1 o'clock in the morning and said, I need your desk. We need to write. And we did. We wrote, and we made deadline. And I told you about the story after 9/11 when we're on the air the next morning, and we're three sports guys, supposedly, but we actually do a credible job of covering 9/11 because we're on the air when it's happening, and some advertising idiot in the hallway gets into a near fist fight with our program director about wanting to run us off the air and send us home so he could run network programming, and the program director held his ground and said, no, they're not going anywhere, and we actually got praise for that from media critics. So, long story short, Dino, this is an opportunity for real news people, journalists, to drop the sports thing and go out and cover the story of your lifetime. And they're not doing it, Dino. In fact, there is no chance they would ever run a column such as the one you suggest, because they would be too frightened to pop their balloon. These people who own The Athletic and VCs who own The Athletic and run it and have raised millions for The Athletic, they, believe me, are frightened that sports aren't coming back. It's almost as if they're trying to speak it back into existence. In reality, I wish the editor, whoever runs that thing, would call everybody together, all the writers, some very talented writers, and say, go cover this thing, find me great stories, let's maximize our potential as a site. Instead, they're tanking, and they're going down the sports rabbit hole. It's sophomoric, and I can say that pretty much across the board. I have found some examples, and I wrote it in that column about pure journalists who have done a great job through this as so-called sports people. But generally, Dino, no, you're never, ever going to see any of those, including ESPN, write a slam-bam column, because it would be killing the golden goose.
I spoke almost exactly as you did in the first hour of the show here tonight, Jay, talking about how those in our industry who normally are in a niche sort of a position where they're covering only one thing or one topic, one agenda, such as sports, in our case, that this is an opportunity that should be looked upon so favorably by these people to be able to show some uncanny and maybe some unknown range and depth and the ability to connect in other ways beyond, you know, merely talking about sports. But I just think that there are few and far between in our industry who are able to make that pivot successfully and do it and feel confident in doing it. Now, you mentioned something before, something we've
done. Well, you know what, let me just say one thing. They're brainwashed. It's not that they're unable or they don't have the talent. They have been brainwashed so long by being part of sports instead of covering sports, that they are afraid of the backlash. A Boston Globe columnist might be afraid that, you know, the owner of the Red Sox, who also owns the Globe, might crack down on him if he crosses the line and says sports should not return when John Henry has a vested interest in sports returning. That's the problem, Dino. It's media hanging on for dear life in a terrible time for media. and people being afraid.
Yeah.
They're trying to, you know, make a living for their families, I understand, but at some point, either get out of the business or do the business proud and do the work you should be doing right now.
Right, and just to clarify, I'm not talking about how there shouldn't be sports or ripping the plan that Major League Baseball is floating right now. I'm talking about being able just to comprehensively get into the issue of what's going on over the last month in this country and to talk about it intelligently and to be able to, you know, kind of show some range in your game beyond the focal point of sports is what I'm talking about, Jay.
Sports fans, largely.
I understand.
And they're fanboys.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think The Athletic has many of them, and along with some real pros. That's what confuses me. Remember, the two guys who founded The Athletic are in their 30s, so they're kind of fanboys themselves. And so they probably wanted generally to hire people like them, fans. And hey, face it, Dino, you and I have faces. Anybody who has opinions that at times are frowned upon, we always hear that echo. What's wrong with you? Why aren't you a fan of the team? Why can't you just enjoy this? Well, Hal, this is a multi-billion-dollar industry. It's not a sandbox. And if you're that sophomoric and immature, go back to the sandbox and go read a blog run by a sandbox guy. There are plenty of them. But no, the true journalists in sports media are far and few between. The New York Times has done a credible job. The Washington Post has done a credible job. And there have been some others. And aspects of The Athletic have been good. ESPN has covered the story. But remember this, Dino. Jeff Passan, who's a remarkably talented guy, is part of the machine. MLB leaked it to Jeff Passan. And he wrote it pretty much word for word the way they wanted it written. That was leaked to Jeff Passan. He didn't uncover that like Woodward and Bernstein. Same with Ken Rosenthal. They are part of the mechanism. So anybody out there who thinks, wow, Pulitzer for Ken Rosenthal, he was handed the Astros story. These guys are handed this stuff because they are approved media members by Major League Baseball. That's the way it works today, and shame on these media companies, including ESPN, for letting that happen. But they damn well know that is exactly what goes down and why a guy like me is frowned upon and it has to deal with so much shit because they are the ones who start it. And I proudly deal with it. As you know, proudly unhirable.
Jay, you mentioned the 89 World Series. You were there. Were you actually in the press box at the time that the earthquake hit?
Yes.
What was that like? I mean, obviously, I can imagine.
I'm working in Denver, okay?
Right.
Where you used to work in Denver.
Right.
I'm literally on the air with a Denver radio station that I worked for. And I'm doing sort of a pre-World Series, whatever game that was. All of a sudden, the press box starts shaking. And I say, holy shit, we're having an earthquake on the air. And they ended up running this as a promo for weeks. KGO on whatever the station was called, KX, I can't remember what it was called. I don't think it's there anymore. On the scene in San Francisco at the earthquake. Anyway, from that point on, it was harrowing. Because in California, I've been through my share of earthquakes. Generally, you feel the tremors, and then it stops. And then you think, okay, I survived another one. Maybe there's a little damage out there. But during that, Dino, I never saw so many people diving under tables and screaming. I mean, grown men in that press box. In Candlestick Park, that press box was at the top of the stadium, and it was rocking, baby. It was rocking, and I thought it was going to tumble down through the stands, the upper stands, through the lower. I felt like we were going to do that. But it stopped. So I go through the stands, and you know, people are figuring, okay, we had our little earthquake and the game will start. The Sony Walkman device was sort of just starting at the time, and I saw somebody with a TV holding it, a big, you know, miniature television in the aisle, and I saw that first picture of the Bay Bridge cracking open, with a piece of the bridge just hanging there and a car almost screeching to a halt, going overboard. And I realized this is no normal earthquake. And from that point on, you have seen the scenes on the field where the ambulance comes on the field, the police cars, and the families walk on the field, and they're petrified. And you realize this is one of those moments in our lives that things are going to change.
Well, you weren't.
If I'm not boring you, I'll tell you another story. Afterward, you know, a couple hours later, it's getting dark.
Yeah.
And a lot of us have to file stories, and obviously we're back in the age where we don't have cell phones. What we did have, though, was, oddly enough, a phone line that had a cord that had been left behind by a San Jose television station, a truck. And I walked over to it, and I found it, and I said to a bunch of writers standing in the freaking parking lot near dark with our rental car headlights on us, "Guys, I have this cord." So we set up a system where, you know, guys who had written on their laptops with batteries, Eastern time zone first, Central, I was in the mountains, so I had a little time, and then Pacific. So while I was waiting, a South American radio guy comes up to me, and he says, "I'd like to use your phone." And I said, "All right, here's the line." And he hooked it to his portable phone, his, you know, dial-up phone. And he kept rambling. And I finally tap him on the shoulder and say, "Hey, pal, I need the phone." And he tries to walk away, and I hang up the phone. And I thought, he's going to want to fight me. As it is, I almost, you know, lost my life in an earthquake. Now this guy wants to fight me because I hung up his phone. Long story short, I've got a big, burly Philadelphia sports writer stands in front of the phone and says, "Go ahead and file." And he's guarding this guy like an offensive lineman as I'm trying to file this story. So, I mean, I could tell stories all night about being in these crisis periods as a writer. I've been in my share of them. They're amazing stories. But the point is, if you're a true journalist and not just a sports writer, you will revel in telling these stories and not about how I covered, you know, John Elway. That was great, but I you know, would much prefer to have covered that earthquake as a career experience.
How long, because you weren't living in California at the time, you were staying in a hotel in San Francisco, I take it. How long were you at the park that night, and how did you get back to the hotel that night?
Oh, man. We finally, like I said, we had our rental cars, but the police weren't letting people back into the core area of San Francisco where my hotel was because of looting and so on. And sure enough, we were not allowed to take, the interstate highway back into the city. We had to take back streets, and sure enough, we saw the looting. So I get back to the hotel. It was near Market Street. I think it was called the Park 55 or something like that. And I have a message in my room to call my colleague at the Rocky Mountain News named Norm Clark, baseball writer. So I knock on Norm's door. This is in the wee hours, and he opens it, and I say, "Man, how you doing?" He says, "I've been waiting to cover this thing my whole damn life." He was, like, actually excited to have done this, and I wasn't quite as excited. I was exhausted and pretty freaked out. But, again, I'm telling you stories about how different writers react to this. You've got guys who can't wait to be in the first plane to go home, and I understand their families are scared. And then you got people like Norm who can't freaking wait to cover the rest of this. And I hung around with them, and we covered this earthquake for 5 days. So, it goes back to whether are you a true journalist or are you in the toy department? And I think you're finding the separation right now in the industry.
Very interesting. Very interesting. Okay, so let's get back to the virus, the fallout, what we might be looking at moving ahead. Our president either is getting bad advice or he's not taking any advice, Jay, because, and I criticized him in the first hour, he wants a big celebration in May to mark the defeat of this virus. And, of course, you've got many people across the country who are still mourning the loss of family and friends and so on and so forth. But CNN reported that Trump has been hoping for what he calls a big bang that's going to reignite the economy and get it back quickly to where it was before the pandemic, the alleged pandemic, began 2 months ago. And so I'm thinking, no, this is wrong. You don't want to go down this path. This is, the optics of this look horrible. You just, if we do get to that point in May where this thing is looking as though it's receding into the rearview mirror more and more, let's just carry on as normal. No celebration, no parties, no banners, no parades. Your thoughts on this?
Well, obviously, he doesn't want to listen to his health experts when they disagree with his false optimism. But everybody should know, including Trump, including sports leagues and TV networks, that even if this subsides a bit and there is some hope and we see a bit of a flattening of a curve, it does not mean It isn't coming back with a vengeance in the fall. This is known as a, I'm no expert, but from what I understand, it's a seasonal virus. It could come back in the fall. Hell, it might not even go away in the summer. The New York Times reporting that today. So how dare he continue to try to create hope when, there seems to be a bit of hope, but I don't know. The virus continues to spread. These hot spots are popping up. It's like a whack-a-mole game. You know, one place gets better, and then here's another one. I hear that rural areas are now going to be slammed. Remember, some of those figures are deceiving in rural areas because they haven't had testing. New York is an unspeakable death zone. You've got hospitals overrun with chaos, and you've got Trump saying we're going to have a party. See, Dino, I thought he came around last week when he said this is the biggest crisis of our lives. I think there are two or three Trumps. This is like the civil president. I don't know which one he is from day to day, but now you have him saying this, and then he's the one who sparked this sports bubble nonsense by coming out on Saturday and saying that he expects sports to be back sooner than later, and he has this conference call with all the sports commissioners. The absolute wrong thing to tell these guys. What he should have told them was, this really isn't the time. Should sports even be the first initiative to come back? We should be focusing on businesses resuscitating the economy. We should be focusing on schools coming back. We should be focusing on maybe churches and synagogues coming back. Why are we focusing on sports? Because Trump is a big old bro. He wants sports to come back. I don't need to remind you, Dino, that if the NFL owners had approved his bid for the Buffalo Bills in 2014, that he would not be the president of the United States. So blame them.
What do you know about this thing that I've seen, this gambling thing? I don't know how much you can shed some light on this, but there was some scandal in Vegas about NBA 2K players. What, you know anything about this?
There is such little to bet on right now.
Yeah.
Vegas casinos are empty, obviously. The bookmakers are dying. I think you can bet on Belarus soccer right now, Russian ping pong, and there are certain people out there who will bet on it. But last week, there was an NBA 2K players-only tournament in which actual players from home playing video games faced each other, and Vegas did take bets on this, okay? And because ESPN pre-taped this event, the word leaked that Derrick Jones Jr., who also won the dunk contest in controversial fashion, if you recall, beat Kevin Durant, the number one seed, in the first round. So this information leaked to enough gamblers who all of a sudden created this one-sided, lopsided, we're betting on Derrick Jones, nobody betting on Kevin Durant, and Vegas is all pissed off, it lost its ass. So you actually had an insider information scandal based on a video game involving actual NBA players. You cannot make this stuff up.
So this wait a minute, they took bets on a virtual game?
Yep, video games. The NBA 2K is a video game.
Right.
And they recruited, ESPN involved,
yeah,
recruited actual NBA players to face, everybody's in their sequestered in their homes, Kevin Durant, Derrick Jones Jr., first round, many other players also facing each other. This first round matchup, major upset. You know, this is, like a number one seed in March Madness losing.
Wow.
And this actually leaked out, Dino, and enough bettors found out about it that they bet the heavy on Derrick Jones Jr., and they made out.
Unbelievable.
Yes, that happened.
Wow.
The NBA, by the way, wants, is obviously Adam Silver encouraging legalized gambling. He wants a piece of that pie. Well, there's an Exhibit A, Adam, of how in a very odd way, you might not have the mechanism to be a watchdog at all times.
You know what it is, Jay? It all comes down to one very simple thing in this country, which is exclusive to any other country that you want to compare it to. As far as the sports zeitgeist or the fiber that runs so deep with sports in this country as compared and contrasted with any other country, in America, the great opiate of the masses is not drugs. It's sports. And this is evidence of that. I mean, in terms of the way they're trying to manufacture, like I saw today, ESPN's going to be involved in this as well, Jay. They're going to have a few players, they're going to, I guess, tape them at their individual homes, and they're going to be playing a round of horse against each other. And ESPN is going to televise this as if you, me, or any serious sports fan wants to see a bunch of players who aren't playing in the NBA shooting rounds of horse.
Well, unfortunately, Dino, I think sports has dumbed down through the years.
Oh, I'd agree with you there.
And you're getting a lot of, a lot of smart young people out there. I don't want to classify young people as dumb, but there are a lot of bros out there who love sports and love their ESPN and love to gamble. And I think that's the new ESPN audience. Hell, on our old show, Around the Horn, I remember them telling us, think frat houses. And Woody Page certainly did every day. But they want, obviously, the idea is to skew younger, even though I always argued that because I felt, hell, the disposable income in this country would be 35 and up, 40s, 50s, not 20s. And I think any data out there will show you that young men just out of college, a lot of them are at home right now because they can't get a job. And now that's about to get much worse out there. So the salvation for a lot of people, young people, ESPN, and they'll stick anything on the air right now for reasons I explained earlier. They're desperate for programming because they're still charging an outrageous fee each month for their programming, even though there's no live sports. I would say, Dino, it's the great opioid, yet at the same time, I think that's being tested right now because I think priorities are changing. They're estimating 25 million could be unemployed very shortly here. Suddenly people cannot afford their cable bill. They can't really worry about sports or think about how, you know, this team might look when sports comes back. Yet ESPN, if you read ESPN.com, read it right now, I guarantee you every story on there is projecting some sports team or sports event eventually happening, and they're trying to almost like whet that appetite. Here's your cocaine. I know you're all trying to get off your cocaine, but here's your cocaine. I'm giving you right now. Keep giving it to you every day. Stay high. Keep that habit going so you'll be with us later when we need your money for more cocaine down the road. I think that's an analogy that is apt right now. If you had these people running these media companies right now in private, they are scared shitless at what's going down, and that's why they're supporting this bubble idea. But I don't know, Dino. I think if people have brains in their heads right now, they're worried about their families and their loved ones and staying healthy and staying away from those damn cyclists, and they're not really worrying about how the Chicago Bears might look and that big old quarterback controversy between Nick Foles and
Mitch Trubisky.
Mitch Trubisky. Yeah. Who cares? Yeah. We're in the health crisis of our lives. I mean, a lot of people know at least one person who has died or is in the hospital. We have no idea if we sneeze whether it's, you know, oh my God, this is it. And people are actually worried about their sports teams and who the Chargers are going to draft in 2 weeks. See, that's what blows me away. That's why I think, Jesus, I missed my calling in life when I had to write about sports this whole time. But fortunately, you know, you hope that enough smart people out there will read and listen to you. Unfortunately, Dino, as you're finding out, you know, program directors out there, they don't want smart people. They're intimidated. They want dumbasses on the air that are sports fans as well who don't know how to think about a pandemic because they're afraid that these hosts will scare off the audience. And I think that applies across the board to sports media. I'd love to hear what Al Michaels, Jim Nantz, Mike Tirico have to say about this. We'll never hear it. But Bob Costas, God love him, wherever he is, would be front and center on this story.
Jay, another great week, and thanks for your contributions once again, and we do it again next week on a Wednesday.
Rare form today, Dino.
Thanks, brother. Take care. The one and only Jay Mariotti, every Wednesday night on the show, and our thanks to him for another round of conversation. Good stuff, right?